Welcome to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. The United Nations has set out 17 Sustainable Development Goals with 169 targets and over 230 indicators to guide citizens and countries towards sustainable practices and policies. Goals such as good health and well-being, quality education, gender equality, and climate action come with subsets of measurable targets, some already achieved in developed countries such as Canada, the US, and throughout Europe. Other goals seem like distant, even aspirational objectives to be accomplished once economic goals and growth are met. The Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, have been worked on over the past several years, initiated as far back as the Rio Summit of 1992 and formally ratified in 2015 by over 190 countries around the world with an ambitious target date of 2030. The SDGs provide a roadmap to basic human rights in the areas of social justice, education, gender parity, and environmental protection. And even though goals such as no poverty and industry, innovation, and infrastructure touch on economic balance, the language the SDGs use and the methods outlined do not fit traditional neoclassic economics. There are some in the business and financial worlds who are trying to interpret SDGs to fit economic goals and vice versa. Several approaches have been developed to achieve this marriage of two dissimilar yet important mindsets. While environmentalists talk about clean water and air, responsible consumption, affordable clean energy, the investment community speaks about bottom lines, profit margins, and GDP. Green bonds, impact investing, corporate social responsibility, and more recently, responsible investing have become part of the lexicon while trying to find sustainable solutions that everyone can get behind. Yes, investors want a reasonable return on their investment. At the same time, those concerned about the health of the planet talk about divestment and ethical investing. Responsible investment is an approach to investing that aims to incorporate environmental, social, and governance factors into investment decisions to better manage risk and generate sustainable, long-term returns. I attended a recent conference hosted by the Responsible Investment Association of Canada, one of several global organizations that adheres to the Principles for Responsible Investing, which is an initiative of the United Nations Environmental Program, and I spoke to some of the attendees to find out more about responsible investing. First, I spoke with Kevin Rainey, who is focused on the translation of SDGs into measurable economic targets. Rainey is the Director of Product Strategy and Development for Sustainalytics. He is a part-time faculty member at the University of Waterloo, where he teaches in the area of business and human rights. Kevin has 20 years' experience in the fields of responsible investment and corporate sustainability and is an expert in development of metrics and the methods to evaluate sustainable performance.
I mean, there are many investors out there increasingly that are aware of the impact of their investments and have a desire to understand to what degree their investments are aligned with broad societal goals. They're aware that sustainability matters from so many different angles. It matters to many of us because we happen to care about the future of the planet and the well-being of people on it. But from an investor's perspective, there's that values-based lens. There's also another lens, which is aware that much business activity is simply unsustainable. And so it's in their long-term interest as investors to align their investments with sustainability goals and with social goals. And one very important angle on this that has become more around which there's growing awareness is the systemic nature of many of our sustainability issues. If we look at the set of issues, the agenda reflected in the SDGs, we see that so much of what is there is systemic. Issues around climate change, issues around resource use, the sustainability of resource use, issues around the health and well-being of people, of participants in economies, all of these things have a major impact on the health and resilience of economies in a systemic way. And so investors, I would say enlightened, the more enlightened investors are recognizing for them to achieve their investment goals, they need to think about the health and the resilience and the sustainability of the economies in which they're investing. And the SDGs have emerged as a major focal point, a lens through which they can view that set of issues and think about how well aligned their investments are with that, with the agenda reflected there.
And what about you and your capacity with Sustainalytics? How much weight do you put to the sustainable development goals, and how much is it purely the usual metrics of an investment firm?
Well, everything we do is outside the usual metrics, and by that I assume you mean sort of traditional financial metrics that you would see in the models of you know, valuation models that have traditionally been
management.
Used. Yeah, exactly. So everything we do is outside, not outside of that, but a complement to all of that, because in fact, you know, ESG issues have really not been properly reflected or even reflected at all in those models and that set of metrics. But within the range of what we do as Sustainalytics, we serve a variety of use cases and a variety of sets of goals or motivations for investors. Very broadly speaking, one set of goals and motivations is to better account for ESG-related risks from a financial materiality perspective, which of course is important. They're real. Another lens is more oriented toward values, principles, and is looking at alignment with certain values and principles for its own sake. Now, there's also a lens that recognizes, as I was saying earlier, that these things come together, especially when you're talking about systemic issues. But to come back to your question, the SDGs are a focus for one product offering that we offer at Sustainalytics. Another one is more explicitly risk-focused, so it's just looking at issues that, you know, through a traditional materiality lens can be considered financially material. And we've got a number of other products. So we've got a new carbon rating that's looking at carbon risk and various other things. So SDGs are one of the one product line.
Next is Dunstan Lance, CEO of Responsible Investment Association of Canada, who explained what the RIA does and who attends its conferences.
So the Responsible Investment Association is Canada's industry association for responsible investing. We're composed of a diverse range of members, including financial institutions, asset management firms, asset owners like universities, pension funds, endowments, and foundations, and even faith-based organizations as well as research firms and analysts and others working in the space. We've been around, actually, since 1989. We were known then as the social investment organization. But the language just started to shift a little bit in our space in the mid-2000s to have a bigger tent. So the word responsible investing became the norm. And responsible investing, of course, refers to investments that incorporate not just social, but also environmental and corporate governance factors. And so this conference is our flagship event. We've got about 440 attendees here today. Looking forward to next year, where we're going to be in Montreal for the 2019 conference. The conference is our flagship event, but we also do other events year-round on a smaller scale, primarily Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, where we provide cocktail events for our members to be able to form a sense of community. And we have found that, our members have found that they really like that sense of community because it can be really inspiring to find others who have common interests and shared values. But in addition to the events, we also do research, such as the Canadian Response Investment Trends Report. We do that every 2 years. We've got a new one coming out later this year that tracks the growth of responsible investing in Canada. We also collaborate with our international peers on similar research at the global level. So that's called the Global Sustainable Investment Alliance. But we also have a big focus on education. So, for example, training investment advisors and training other financial professionals about the value of considering ESG factors. It's not just about my values or your values. There's a strong business case for incorporating ESG factors into investment decisions. So we have a training and certification program. We've put more than 300 people through in the past couple of years. So still small, but growing as the interest grows in responsible investing. We expect that to continue to grow. Another core focus area for us moving forward is trying to spark more demand for responsible investments. So you know, the last speaker in the last session, we talked about the need for a national dialogue, a national conversation about responsible investing. And I think it makes sense. I think the time is right. A lot of consumers are already thinking about, eco-friendly packaging or whatever it might be in their consumption decisions. So why not ask those same questions about their portfolios? So our starting point has been to try to educate the industry first, but I think the next step is to engage the investing public. We've done some research which has found that about 3/4 of Canadian investors are interested in responsible investing once you tell them about it, but 3/4 of them, so the same number, know little or nothing about it. So it's time to have a national conversation, and we want to help stimulate that conversation. So it depends on sponsorship, so I'm going to be talking to some of our partners to put together a campaign to grow awareness.
Next is Kevin Thomas, the new executive director for SHARE, Shareholder Association for Research and Education. SHARE is a Canadian leader in responsible investment services, research, and education. It works with a growing network of institutional investors, helping them become active owners and develop and implement responsible investment policies and practices.
Let's talk about SHARE and what it is. Maybe you can just give us a brief description of what SHARE is and does.
Well, it's a responsible investment service organization, so we work for institutional investors, helping them to implement responsible investment within their own operations, usually through the methods of proxy voting and active ownership, shareholder engagement, and policy activity. So our real goal is to help them promote a sustainable, inclusive, and productive economy through their investment practices.
How does this differ from traditional, I go to a financial advisor, he or she advises me on what stocks or bonds to purchase? How does that differ from that?
Well, we come in after the fact. There's a process in which you select what's in your portfolio to decide what you're invested in. But once you've got that asset, the real question is, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to make sure those companies are acting in a responsible way, that they're actually addressing the sustainability issues in their own operations and in their supply chains? And how are you going to promote an economy in which those companies can flourish, in which our society can grow, our economy can grow? That requires active ownership. So you're not just a passive owner of these companies or these other assets. You're actually someone that's trying to change the way business is done in this country.
And you do that by attending the AGMs, putting up
Well, there's the AGM, so there's two opportunities. One is at the AGM, you can file proposals as a shareholder. You can debate in the on the, from the floor at an AGM. That's one piece. But all throughout the year, there are opportunities to also engage with boards and management and talk to them as shareholders, either in a permissive way, in the sense that they know the shareholders back the sustainability initiatives the company is doing on its own, or in a, an advocacy way where we're saying, here are some issues, some risks, some opportunities that you're not currently addressing, but you need to. And here, as a group of shareholders, collectively, collaboratively, we are advocating for changes in the way you do business.
So you're advocating on behalf of the shareholders.
Yes.
Representing them, not just at AGMs, but throughout the year. Identifying issues that may come up, and then alerting the shareholders, hey, this is something you might want to know about. What is your response? Is that how it works?
That's right, and we work on behalf of a group of shareholders. So the idea here is, individually we have some power, but collectively we have a lot of power. So we get together shareholders, in our case with about $22 billion in assets, who collectively go to the companies and say, here's where we want to see some changes. And where possible, we leverage that with even bigger alliances globally with our partners internationally to bring together investors as a group to speak out, not just with individual companies, but sometimes with governments, for example, or with regulators. This week we'll be meeting with the securities regulators to talk about climate change regulations and disclosure regulations in Canada, and that will be with a group of institutional investors, some of Canada's largest institutional investors with trillions of dollars in assets. So that's where we start to leverage our power collectively and hopefully achieve real changes.
Now, traditionally, a lot of the proposals at AGMs revolve around the CEO salary or board governance. Are you seeing more and more environmental issues come to the fore?
Well, Canada's a bit unusual compared to, say, the United States, where there's hundreds and hundreds of shareholder proposals each year. And there you see a trend where environmental and social proposals are starting to gain ground. You'll see a lot more of them being filed. Canada, there's maybe 70 proposals filed each year. That's it.
That's all.
And at least half of them were withdrawn before they even get to the AGM, because the companies responded in some meaningful way to the shareholder and agreed to do some of the things which were requested. Most of those are governance proposals, but I'd say maybe a third are environmental or social related proposals now. Many of those filed by ourselves on behalf of our clients, but we're seeing a move towards that, and it's because, I guess, in Canada, when we bring those things to the board, we start with discussion, we debate, we propose, we try to work with the company, and it only goes to the point of a proposal when there has not been any movement. We've been lucky, I think, in sense, and maybe because we're persistent as owners, that we've been able to move companies without always having to go to proposals. But there are times in which you really need to show the company that a majority of their shareholders, or at least a significant minority, support this proposal and want to see something done.
How does the shareholder advocacy compare to consumer advocacy?
Well, I think as a consumer, you have a choice where you shop. You may or may not want to be there one day to the next. Your goal is to get something good for yourself. As an investor, actually, your interests are a bit beyond that. It's not just to get a return yourself. You want that company to be successful. Your goal going in there is not to denigrate the company, to say bad things about it. It's actually to help the company to improve. And I think we have a long-term interest in the health of that company and in our, the health of our economy. I think as a consumer, you're somewhat removed from that. You have a particular interest at that moment in time, but not necessarily the same long-term interest. As a citizen, you do. We sometimes forget that we are all citizens and have a broader policy interest as well.
How do you feel about divestment from an investment? Investing, you know, divesting from oil companies is in the headlines today. Is that going to be effective?
Well, I think I make a distinction here. Divestment is, to me, is a financial choice. You look at a company or a sector and you say, we've assessed the risks, we've assessed the opportunities, we've looked at this, we say, this doesn't work for us in our portfolio at this time, and we're out of this. And it can be in a company or sectoral level, maybe an asset class, it doesn't matter. You make decisions on that. As a tactic for change, I don't think it's as effective as active ownership. And that's because the catalyst for change is constantly being in there. In fact, people used to ask me about this as a consumer. I'm concerned about what this company is doing with child labor in its supply chains, for example. And they say, should I just not shop at this store? And my answer would always be, no, you should go into that store and talk to them, because they don't know day in and day out why you didn't shop there. They just know they didn't make a sale, but it could be for any number of reasons. The price was wrong, whatever. But if you go in and ask a question, you talk to them, they'll remember that. That'll get relayed up. And the more people that do that, the more they'll know they've got an issue to deal with. So my first choice is active ownership. There may be points at which you've tried that tactic and it's come to a point where the company is really unresponsive. Then I think you're in that financial position where you say, this risk is big enough for us and a big enough concern that we shouldn't be invested in this particular company. Fair decision, but it's not a tactic for change.
Next is Michael Jancy, CEO of Sustainalytics. He was the founder of Jancy Research and has been active in the responsible investment field since 1990. Jancy is the co-author of The 50 Best Ethical Stocks for Canadians, High Value Investing, published by Macmillan Canada.
All right, Michael, you were a keynote speaker today at the Responsible Investment Association of Canada conference. You welcomed everyone. You talked a little bit about the past. You've been in it for a long time. You've been in ethical investing for a long time. Tell me what got you started. What made you go down that path?
Well, I grew up in a family where, you know, these types of issues that we look at every day now were part of the fabric of our family, but in regards to thinking about what I wanted to do for a career, there wasn't any particular connection. I mean, it wasn't investing never looked at these issues. So I went through school and ended up very early in a financial services career. And then I heard a radio interview that was focused on the very nascent beginnings of this thing called ethical investing. And it was a light bulb going on. And I was like, well, we can create change through the power of capital. You direct investment funds and money to those companies that are doing a better job on environmental and social other issues, and you keep it away from those that aren't doing as good a job. And that was very powerful for, you know, to me. I'd long believed companies were the most powerful actors on earth, and they had the ability or opportunity to do things better than they were doing. And if we were going to influence that behavior, it was going to be through capital. And so that's how I got started. Worked in a small shop for a couple years before heading out on my own, which I guess was part of my entrepreneurial bent as well.
Well, we've come a long way from ethical investing. It used to be against the sin industries, guns and tobacco and alcohol. How has it evolved, and what are we looking at today in 2018?
Well, the movement started from a values-based perspective. It was generally driven by individuals and institutions that wanted to invest in a way which was aligned with their personal value set or organizational mission. One of the myths around this movement was that people didn't want to get a competitive bottom-line return. That was never true. They just wanted to drive that return in a way which was consistent with who they were. And in the early days, it was more of a black-and-white issue. I mean, we just didn't have all of the information we do now. And so it was more of a focus on if something was happening at a company that was egregious, it would be, removed from a portfolio. It's what, our company wanted to try and change. Understanding that companies do some things well, other things not so well, begin to bring a deeper analytical framework and methodology to it. And through that then, it was aligned with the understanding that as the world got more complex, that environmental issues and social issues were more than just about values. They were actually business risks, investment risks and opportunities that professionals needed to take account of if they were going to make the best decisions possible for their clients. And so we shifted from a values-based environment into a shareholder value-based environment. But you know what? I think, the pendulum swung so far from one side to the other that I think life is about equilibrium. And that pendulum is shifting back now, and there's an understanding that all investments have an impact, and it's not just about the shareholder value, that we do need to be concerned about the impact our investments are having on the world around us. And so you're starting to see that gain a lot more traction in both the pension funds and large asset owners down to individual investors. So understanding that they can get a good bottom line return, they can meet their retirement goals, and at the same time make a difference in regards to the communities in which they live, the environment, and so on.
Now, you said something very compelling. You're seeing the trends are changing. We have to not only connect with Wall Street, but we have to connect with Main Street. So what did you mean by that?
Well, the interesting thing is that this is a movement that started with individuals and making decisions around how they spend and invest their money. It didn't really garner a lot of traction until it was the large pools of capital, sovereign wealth funds and pension funds and so on, that started to realize that it was just smart investing to look at environmental and social issues, and they were sort of agnostic on the value side of the equation. But at the end of the day, for this idea or concept to be successful and gain widespread traction and to solidify itself through the ups and downs of the markets, individuals have to think about this in a more meaningful way. And it's only when you can get the broad base of a population thinking about investing in a new way that really you're going to have fundamental change, whether it's legal change and fiduciary duty, how governments and public policy react to these things. And so that's why the connection with Main Street, the everyday investor, the men and women and so on who are investing, it has to resonate with them, not just the portfolio manager that's sitting in the white shirt with suspenders on Bay Street.
And they have to know they have a power and the ability to change things.
Yes, and they do. There's individual leverage available now. There's a growing number of financial planners and financial advisors that have the capacity to help individuals now, not just with their financial goals and financial planning, but doing it in a way that is aligned with their value set and what they want to achieve. That's a change. And then when you start to collect those assets and you think about the power of your wallet in aggregate with your neighbors and your friends and your family, it soon becomes a very powerful symbol and a very powerful tool for change.
You also talked about ensuring that the investments reflected a world where the people that are paying into the retirement plans will be able to live a healthy life, clean water, clear air.
Yeah.
What kind of a shift does that represent for the portfolio managers?
Well, it's a fundamental shift, and I mean it's a scary concept because we've gone from a point where the man or woman who's responsible for managing a portfolio, all they had to worry about was the bottom line, and they were trained in a system where they could look at numbers and they could look at the economy and sort of extrapolate from that what they should invest in and what not. The idea of having to look at socioeconomic issues, environmental issues, governance issues was scary enough in its own right, but it gained traction because they learned very quickly that it helped them make smarter decisions. And it was just part of that investment decision-making process. But taking that the next step and saying, I can look at environmental, social, and governance issues because it's helping me, generate the returns I need for my plan members to give them the pension check at the end of the day. Taking that to say, I also have to think about the world in which they're retiring, that is a big leap. There's no question. But we're starting to see some pension funds make that jump. Not in Canada so much, certainly not in the United States, but in places like the Netherlands, in the Nordics. It's a conversation that's happening in France and to a certain extent in Japan and Australia. I'm talking with chief investment officers who are now saying, my job is to make sure there's money there 20, 30, 40 years down the line. And of course we have to look at environmental issues as part of that. That just makes sense. But it also makes sense that I have a responsibility and my team has a responsibility that the world in which my plan members are retiring into is a world they want to retire into. I mean, what good is a check if people aren't able to breathe the air or drink the water? And, you know, that, I mean, it's a big leap. But the idea of integrating environmental social governance issues into an investment decision was as big or bigger a leap 10 years ago. So we've done that. We've made that leap in most places around the world. And so we're starting to make the jump to a broader understanding.